Thank you. Let's bow our heads in a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for this privilege of being here tonight. Help me, dear Lord, that I may say something to help someone, and they in return will go out and help someone. We thank you for everything. Amen. Well, indeed, a pleasure to be here. You know, I get scared every once in a while. It seems like so many good things happen to me. So many people will come by and they'll shake hands and say, Bill, I remembered you from so and so. And I don't want them to be like the reading my obituary or something like that, but it does make a fellow think, you know. Sometimes I think about this year, a fellow was going through the graveyard, and he was just reading epitaphs on Larry Hyde, Jim Jones, born in 1857, died in 1902. Over there, there lied so and so and so and so. And so he went there and he seen that another one, it says, pause, kind stranger, as you pass through, so I was once the same as you. As I am now, soon you shall be. So be prepared to follow me. He says, to follow you, I'll not be content till I find out which way you went. We have to, in here, we have to be very careful who we follow. The same as it sounds like a joke, but it's really serious. You know, I wouldn't be here. I've been drilling what you say. Someone would ask me, Bill, how come you're sober? My answer would be to him, I met a man. Yes, I did. 13 years ago, I met a man. Well, he says, you've met men before that. But no, none like this man. Yes, I've met many a man. I've met men who was very well met. And I've seen some that I would say, I felt as though that I was their superior. Which I was their superior, because I had a pint under my belt and I had a couple more bucks in my pocket to buy another pint. So it made me a superior. It seems as though that bottle always took over with Bill Tolliver. Sometimes I wonder about this guy, how he come to get that way. And could I have been insane? Touch of insanity was down there somewhere. You know, I read my first introduction to her. The man went on about the 12 steps. And he says, he turned his will and his life over to God as he understood it. I said, now how could that happen? I've been to church, married in a church family. I don't know nothing about the Bible, very little, never read. But the thought to me, I said, I don't have to know very much about it. Because he says, as I understand, not as a minister, not as a layman would understand, but I could understand. I put it as a foreign language. Just today, I'll gather so much. Tomorrow, I'll gather so much. As I continue in the program, I'll continue to gather. And it has been so. And about the sanity part? Sure. I must. For a man for 30-some years, I'll just stagger up the streets to go buy a fifth of whiskey or two fifths. And say one time, because he's got a few more dollars left, that I think I'll get a pint of a fifth of gin, I'll have something to go with it. And feel elated when I bring these three fifths home. And it said, just a minute, honey, I got to go out and get me a case of beer. It wasn't a matter of fact, did I have chicken or did I have beef for my family supper. I bought something and I shopped for it. Now, can you imagine? I didn't shop for the liquor. But I shop ever need. How much is that? How much is this? How much is this? How much is that? It wasn't a matter of a price of this liquor that I bought. No time. I could just continue on. Now, I'd be all right now if I did that, say, on my birthday, a week after, you know, or the day when I went on a vacation, that'd have been all right. But every day, you know, I prided myself in that. I said, people always want to have a good time on a holiday. I said, every day is a holiday. You know, you could sway with that, you know. Every day is a holiday. I took it at that, too. But you know, we have some stormy days on holidays. We can't go out. Right after one of my holidays, things got a little stormy in the house, you know. Sometimes the geezers come and fall off the wall. He thinks he fell off the wall, but he didn't. I used to say, you know, one thing, fella says, my wife's a good cook. Says that every day, every Saturday, she serves duck. Say, what do you mean, eat to have duck? I said, we didn't have it to eat, but she served duck all the time. See, when she got through throwing those things at me, I had to duck, you know. Every Saturday was duck day, you know. Yeah. You know, I like to get around a little bit. You know, but all the things, the good Lord provided some sunshine in your life. Isn't he wonderful? Now, I wouldn't say things like that if I wouldn't have be another man. How patiently he sat down beside me, this fella that introduced me and another man. Very important. Before, I didn't give a shit about no man. He's just another Joe, that's all. Only time I had any need for him is when I wanted something. But he went a little bit further than that for me. Each day I think I have something more to appreciate from another man. Today I've had a wonderful day. But let me tell you how I arrived here. You know, if the guy, if something had never happened to this man, if he'd have drank all through it, things had been rosy and sunshine, if he could have woke up with a new automobile, if he could have went down the street and never got a scratch on his automobile, and if he could have drank and never been sick, if he could never have seen no hardships in someone else's life, boy, that would have been, I wouldn't have been here. No, but this man that I met, you know, he reminds me of the time that I've had this sickness. Oh, I had some, yes. Always, I'll never say again, always will say, it was another man that helped me along the way. Look here. You know, I drank to the point where I don't sober. And I stay in that bag for a long time. I stay in that bag. Until I get weak. When I get so weak, I have to eat, and I start to building up again. And about a week after, I'm feeling fine. I don't tell you these things, but I remember one time I was telling a guy about these spasms coming on me. And lo and behold, the guy, I looked at him, and he came out to have one right there. What's wrong? Boy, in an ambulance. Yeah, but I know one thing, the guy got sober after that. He was a long distance tucker. Boy, Bill too was awful good to me. He went out to lead this meeting out in Springfield Center at that Methodist church. And the boy, he sat right under me, and I was telling about this pastor. But let me tell you, brother, that is something. He had to be feeling good, you know. Good morning. Hello there. Did you hear this story about the little boy and the so-and-so? Yeah. And all at once, you know, you things happen. Don't have no feeling. Yeah. Legs are numb. They're gone. Nothing there. Rub this one, brother. Stomp my feet. I'm trying to get the feeling back, you know. No feeling to come. Pretty rough in this falling, you know, then it's getting up around my old ticker, you know. I commence to get nervous. Then there's another degree. Comes in that is fear. I believe as more people die, just as many people, they don't die of the heart attack so much as they do of the fear. When this thing commenced to settle in there, you know, when it got up around my ticker, you know, and the ticker, then you get a little hazy, you know. The first thing you say, this is a man, a way of which I feel. This is a way a man feels when he's dying. Then I rushes into this other garage, and I say, boys, I'm sick. Ha, 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 listen, old Bill, yeah, you did. I said, really, I'm sick, and I lie down there. And after a while, I tell you, always sends a man. Here comes a fellow, and he says, I believe he is sick. Let's take him to the hospital. Lets me down to the company hospital, you know. There's the nurses, there's the doctors. Everybody rushes over. What can I do for you? Yeah, you are. They come and they look at me. They don't know what to do. Now, let me tell you something. I don't know how it is now, but the average doctor didn't know anything about alcoholism. You have a pulse, all right. Evidently, I did, because this guy would walk away and come back, and he would say to the nurse, you know, go in a huddle. From then, they sent me down to the city hospital. The identical thing, you strip off, fella. And they say, you got your stethoscopes over here, over here, and in the back, and up around here. I guess he'd have put it on my head, but as you know, I'm a pretty wealthy guy. My dad told me I was about the wealthiest young man around there. You see, you know all these hunters, they go to Africa for ivory. Somebody ought to kick your head, you know, you've got plenty of it, you know. So, he never got a pet behind the ivory wall. But here's one thing, this thing of fear. Then you have a memory, you know, they say if you're on your way out, you think of things of the past that you've seen happen. And this is one of the things, this girl came to me with this hypodermic, you know, she's going to give me a shot. Oh, I said, oh, no, no, please don't do that. Please don't, please. She said, Bill, this won't hurt you. Oh, no, no. She said, Bill, I wouldn't lie to you. We're going to send you down to the hospital, but this won't hurt you. Please, please leave me. And they said, you're going to put me to sleep. She said, no, Bill. Yeah, I'm not going to put you to sleep. Said, yeah, you believe me. Well, I knew it pretty well. She gave me that shot. But you know why I didn't want that shot? Let me tell you something. All these years I've been drinking, I've had a little gray matter left. If she'd have put me to sleep, oh, Bill would never woke up again. My resistance is gone. I know that. I can remember back up in Columbus, I was working for the state. And one time I was standing on Long Street, was in the winter time, waiting to cross the street. And the young medical student there, he came up to me and he says, Bill, I'd hate to see you get pneumonia. I said, why? He said, man, you don't have enough resistance to throw off a cold, Bill. The blues has got you. And I thought about that guy. Then another guy I thought about. You know, in this guy gets, you're coming out of one of them bad ones, you know, moaning and groaning, just going on terrible. And the young wife was somewhat worried. That's her husband. That's her everything. They're laying up there and suffering with this food. And she says, I think I'd better call a doctor. It was on a beautiful Sunday. The sun was shining bright, I imagine. I would just say it that way. But anyhow, she called that doctor. That happened in the 30s. And this one I was had, mine was in the 40s. And she called that doctor. Oh, a very generous doctor. She says, now to this patient, she says, now young man, you lie still. It won't hurt you. And you won't be bothered. So he gave him that shot very gently. And peacefully he went. And that's been, I imagine, about 27 years ago. You know, he hasn't woke up since. Yeah. You know, that sounds bad, but it's so often it happens. Now, let me say to these, the things, the speaker, not me, but others, is a man that helps to solve another man's problem. He's a guy that walks down the same street and down the same aisle. with you, regardless of how much or how little that it was worth. It ended up the same. You know, when I got to, I came back, all right, the good Lord let me up. You know, sometimes in the church, you know, you get all of them get happy, you know. And they sing, oh, what a mighty God we serve. What a mighty God we serve. But I'd like for them to come to an AA meeting sometime. And you see this man that rose from the dead. You see this man or woman that had laid on the brink of death. Where somebody, even his own prayers, didn't I ask the good Lord, don't, please don't let me die. Don't let me die. That has been my plea 3 times, Lane. You know, the last one was pretty severe. You know, he was gracious enough. I didn't believe it myself. But this one, boy, that's when the doctor says, looks at old Bill and he says, Bill, there's nothing I can do for you. The nurse says, yes, we can do something for Bill. He says, no, I can't do nothing for Bill. Bill, I can't do the thing for him. She said, well, let's send him to a hospital. She meant the city hospital or someplace. And with Doc Kissel says, no hospital will do Bill any good. Said, Bill, do you have any money in your pocket? Do you have enough to pay for an ambulance? Yes. Yeah. So he's going to call an ambulance. Is anyone at your house? My children, showing up that ambulance came. As I came in the door, my front door like that, and my children was sitting, standing like where Jesse was sitting. And this man has me in his arms, another man leaning away. And he said, where can we lay you down? The kids said, upstairs, they made the bed. Everything was just as cool as could be. Then they laid me in the bed. My 3 children stood trying out there and they looked at today. And I looked at my children. I would like to shed a tear, but as they say, something leaves you. Whatever it was, it had left. And my wife wasn't there at the time, but if she'd have been there, there's one thing I would like for her to do. But say, take this man away. I don't want him. Take him away. I would have felt good in my heart. You know, it's something the good Lord planted within every individual is a conscience. And nothing can lead a man like his conscience. I look over at that young daughter just a couple weeks before. She says to me, Daddy, give me $1. I want to take a friend of mine to the show. You might reply, good God, I just gave you $1. What's the matter with you? You may think I'm made out of money. Every time I turn around, you ask me for money. And then I replied, to Daddy, who am I going to ask if I don't ask you? Oh, I like to cry, dear. But no tears would come. I just laid there looking at my daughter. Here I am, probably I'll be an invalid. I don't know. I might die most any time. But one thing sure, I don't think I'll ever walk again. You know, that was something to me. Then, it wasn't long before the doctor came. And he came and he examined, while he was examining the doctor, my wife came up. And, oh man, she was cold. She, I don't believe she cared whether I lived or died. I don't blame her because I'd brought so much suffering. You know, for a long time after I came in the program, I never told her I was going to. All I tried to do was prove myself. I told her so many things over and over and over and over for those number of years. And I knew within myself she had no reason to have any confidence in me. But while this doctor was going around his little hammer and the bottom of his feet, and he says to me, do you chew? I said, yeah. Do you smoke? I said, yeah. She said, that's your trouble. She said, that nicotine gets into your bloodstream. It acts like water and oil in a hose or something like that. That's what makes you nervous like this. And my wife says to him, the doctor, you tell him about that whiskey. And he said, "Oh, a little drink won't hurt you." But you know, old Bill said, "You'll never be bothered with me." You know, I can't talk plain. You know, when you're humble and low, you're whipped. And I said, "You never have to worry about me taking a drink of whiskey, because I never care. I'll never take another one as long as I live." Well, I guess I died about 6 weeks after that. I must have died. You know, I went down and I got the drink, you know. And I found out, now I should drink like a gentleman. So I give me a couple of shots and I'd go home. That's the way a man ought to. You know, oh my goodness, my cat so big, my clothes wouldn't fit me anymore. After Mr. going home, then that little fella jumps on my shoulder. He said, "Boy, you don't have an ounce of brains in your head. Now you're running in that saloon all the time. You just got out of the hospital. You know what the people would think." He said, "What you should do is get yourself a pint. Go to that liquor store and get yourself a pint. Take it home with you. Don't be running in those places, you know." Sure enough, I got me a pint. And after a while, about the third week, another one jumps up there. He said, you get dumber every day. Dumber every day of your life. There you are, going to that liquor store twice a week. Why don't you get yourself a fifth and you don't have to go there and talk?" So I got in my fifth. And there was me. Back on the same old merry-go-round again. You know, I want to tell you, and man, it was rough. Now, that happened in January of 47. And, you know, I commenced to go. Then I got some. I'd have to have this drink to eat. I'd have to have one to sleep. And maybe you have never had, you know, sometimes you get a good West Virginian, he's feeling bad. He says, "How you feeling?" He said, "Man, I got the misery." You know, you all have pain, but you never had the misery. Well, then I developed the miseries, you know. You know, when the old clock, Goodyear clock, would say, "Bong," and she don't bong no more, man, I had the misery. You see, if she would bong five times, I only got to wait 1 hour before that liquor place is open. But if she only bong once, I got a long time to roll that. That's misery. You know, and I'm on my pretty good behavior. So, what helped this thing off, George? You know, when you've been sick and you know, been in bad shape, and you've gotten to be a man, your face is clean, you got a clean shirt on, you don't want to tell them guys out on the street, you know, or somebody, a neighbor. You want to get with these regular guys. You know, the only regular guys you can get with is in that saloon. "Hello, Joe." You know, the Joe's got that towel in his hand like a bar. You know, waiting for the suckers to come in. You know, you leave your perspirations of your hand on that nice mahogany bar. You know, you labor for your money. So he don't want that perspiration up there, so he wraps it off. And sometimes you don't know you. He sees that you might stand there long enough to see if you're going to pull out a 20 or a 1. Now, if you pull out a 20, he's right there, you know, he just keeps saying, But when you pull out a 1, he just sets the bottle down, goes over the machine glass. you know, I know what I'm talking about, don't I? You know, anyhow, I have to go to that place, you know. And I was sitting down, you know, I on this Coca-Cola, I'm drinking a bottle of Coca-Cola, you know. Ah, man, that whiskey like kill me. You know one thing? I've been in the hospital 3 times now. I'm gonna quit, man. You never catch me drinking no more whiskey. And in comes Delilah. You know who Delilah. Ah, man, she's out of this world, you know. Oh, she's just swinging and sway. You know, and she says to me, "Can I have this seat?" I said, "Baby, you can have all the seats." You know what I mean? Yeah. So she sat down, you know. Oh, Delilah, you know, she must have had, that must have been her last skirt. And the last time she didn't want to get it wrinkled, you know, when she sat down. So she had a little twist, you know, when she twisted and throwed it there, you know. Just laughed over like that, you know, Delilah. Oh, Delilah was all right, you know. And, you know, when minute, you know, I got to be a gentleman. I got to be a gentleman. So when old Delilah sits down, I said, what do you have? She looks over there and says, Coca-Cola. I could get anything. Yeah, go ahead and sit. Thank you. Sure. I think she's got an old fashioned or something. And she says, I don't know whether you know my husband or not. I said, I don't believe I do. I says, where does he work? He works at the Mayflower. I said, he does? What does he do? You know, I know fellas up there. Oh, he said, he's a bellman. See, I used to be a bellhop many years ago. I can't pick up nothing. I wondered now, how old is this guy? Oh, she said, he's 23. I said, well, how old are you? She said, I'm 42.
Well, you know, you can't talk that on a bottle of Coca-Cola, you know. Yeah, I think you better give me an old bag too.
So that was that. I set out. You know, as I say, that was probably about the second week in February. And I just commenced to grow faster and faster. I was on my way out of this world. I've gotten to that point where the drink was a must. If I wanted to sleep, I had to have a drink. If I wanted a conversation, I had to have a drink. When I came home, the first place I stopped was at a bar. You know, I never experienced a lot of things that I'm telling you about. Only after my introduction to AA, listen to the speaker, things commenced to roll. I remember distinctly this bar, the glass, was talking back to me, the man in the glass. And that guy says to me, you bought your last new name brand hat. I like the Lee hat, and this was the Lee I had on. But you know, I like to look good, you know. Regardless, everybody likes to have a little touch of color in their eyes. My color was red. It was red all the time. You know. I didn't care about the white so much. I kept the beautiful red eyes you had to see. I had them for a long time. And said I'd never buy it. Then he looked down at my top coat. He said, you bought your last new top coat. And it says this too. If you lose this job, you'll never get another. Boy, that was true. But his last statement was fact. I had arrived there. As long as you live, you will have to have a drink of whiskey. And that was true. That was so true. I was there. You know, but somehow or another, the good master sends a man. After that binge, I'm standing on the corner of Chittenden and 7th Avenue. There's a boy I've been watching. I knew him for a number of years. I drank with him. I put in a lot of time with this boy. But over the couple of years, I watched him. Now, I don't know where AA comes from. I might have read it or something. But anyhow, this particular Monday morning, I'd been up on Arlington and I loaded up with all the cash I had, and that wasn't much. I swelled all I could put in me to tide me over. So while waiting for him, I called this guy. He said, come here, Bill. He said, do you belong to Alcoholic Anonymous? He said, do you have a drinking problem, Bill? Oh, I said, no, I don't have a drinking problem. I see that you're sober and you bought a home and you're married. He says, well, now, if you have a drinking problem, I'd like to talk to you. Something to go back to me. Give me a hunk, man. Oh, I said, yeah, I've been drunk over the weekend. I've had a pretty rough time. He said, well, how about me coming down to talk to you? I said, sure, I'd be glad to have you. He said, I'll be there tonight. Oh, I said, no, not tonight. He said, well, how about tomorrow night? Oh, I said, that's Tuesday night. That's my wife's prayer meeting night. He said, what about Wednesday night? I said, oh, that's my payday. You know, I got to pay my bills. Little guy come up, I said, fella, you only got a couple more nights left. So they came. This man sat on one side, one sat on the other. Yeah. You know, I don't know why the closeness there, and I listened to this first guy. He's out of Pennsylvania. And the story of his youth and how as a kid every town has a stream of water in it. And he went on to tell me about the town drunk falling in this stream of water. And they pulled him out on Sunday morning and laid him on the bank. And he looked at this guy and he said, well, I'll never get like that. And lo and behold, in a few more years, he fell in that same stream. That made sense. Then I watched him as he moved from job to job. That was me. I looked like I'm walking right in his steps. When he moved out of a job, I could see my own self moving out of this job. Then this other boy, he told me about his story, where he came from Pennsylvania. He also was a Pennsylvanian. And he talked to me. And these things unfolded. Then he asked me this. Would I go to a meeting with him? I said, sure. But you know, in the course of that his talk, they always tell something that has some humor and some meaning. It's something that is in the past that'll stick. And this one thing he said, you know, my wife and I were going down the street and we seen a man over there playing an imaginary baseball. And his wife said, Ed, you see that guy? He said, yes, it won't be long before you be catching for it. But you know, I was at that stage. I was there. Yes, sir, I was there. I was there. Then we go to this meeting, you know, and I'm all shaking, bandy legs, you know. You know how things work so mysteriously. You know that Saturday night? Oh, that Saturday, I drank, but I couldn't get drunk. And you know, every place I went, see, they came to see me on a Thursday, I believe it was. And every time, every place I went, I tell these guys, man, I'm going to join AA. Yeah, the beer didn't taste good no more. The whiskey did. I'm going to join AA. I had no idea I was going to really come in, but I'm going. Something was telling me off. So that Saturday night, I have about a pint left, and I went down the basement. I was telling you, things wasn't too good at home. They wasn't fussy or nothing like that. But maybe my wife was something like that. You know, you got some women that just say, yeah, no, yeah, just ask you, you know, that's all. One guy said, you know one thing, I got the cleanest old lady you ever seen in your life. He says, yeah. The guy said, well, I said, I ought to quit her or do something. She just talked to me. I asked her anything, yeah, no, come on eat. There it is. So he said, well, listen here, yeah, don't be like that. Your wife loves her. So I don't know. She said, I don't think she'll ever change. Should I tell you what you do? You just buy your wife a nice fur coat and feed you. So the old guy did. He bought his wife this beautiful fur coat and he brought it away. Give her this fur coat and he said, do you love me, honey? Looked at the first old smile, said, yes, I love you, honey. So he won't see. But that's about the way. Yes, I love you, honey. So, but anyway, I went to this meeting. And this man that led this meeting, fine, you know. But when he commenced to unfold his story, you know, he looked like every hole he went in and on down there on Howard Street, I was right with him. Every old dirty bed he laid in these hotels, I was like that. I was there, I could see the man not robbing him of so much, but holding the chains back, you know. Being a good time Joe, I seen all those things of this guy. You know, now I looked at this guy and I looked at myself. I couldn't hardly sit in a chair. I wouldn't take any coffee for fear I would spill it. We met in a home. And something says to me, you don't compare with this guy. Another little guy jumped up on his shoulder, Chris. You know, he spent $45,000. Mostly of his mother's money. And jobs. He kept his job. But he was always in trouble. Then the thing that got me, I said, now look here. This guy spent $45,000. All I had was 45 cents. was no difference. We both hit the gutter. His 45,000 was gone. My 45 cents was gone also. It didn't make any difference how much, what the quantity was. You got the zero result. I said, well, that's what they'll do for you. But naturally, I drank up my job. Didn't tell you much about them. But as soon as I say, I don't know what to. But anyhow, my story always the same. But this thing, I watched this man. But then he turned to me and said, no, if that guy can't do it, I know I can. You washed him away, which it had me. What difference does it make? He's all in the same boat. He had a home, I had one, he has a wife, I have a family also. It was all the same. But the thing, they asked me back to the second meeting, would you come to this meeting? And I went to that meeting. Here's a brilliant man. And I mean, say brilliant, he was a brilliant man. And he'd been sober for a while. That's why I don't try to. You know, you see a guy, I figure sometimes you might be able to take a drink that was up there, you know. And so, this guy, he told his story. And he'd been sober, and he climbed, man, he's got a beautiful job. And the job was worth quite a bit of dough. You know what? And he'd been sober quite a long time, a few years. Now he's going down to the Mayflower for this supper they're giving for him. And they going through the regular procedures of elevating a man, you know, big time. Says he's waiting at O'Neill to get his tuxedo pressed. While they was pressing his tuxedo. Anyhow, that little fella jumped on his shoulder and says, man, you're really nervous. Says, you know one thing, fella, what you should do. Go right across there to Stone's Grill and get yourself a slug. A little fella said, don't you do that. Man, don't you be that crazy. That's booty. See, I'll tell you what to do. On your way home, after you get your tuxedo, on your way out of Market Street, where's Market? You stop at the liquor store and get yourself a pint. You take it home. And say, just before you get ready to go down to the meeting tonight, you take yourself a slug. Never made it. Never made it. Every meeting I went to, every speaker, every man on each side of me had lost something. A terrible price the man paid to get into this organization. The price is so heavy. Then he asked me, and then we'll forget this, did I ever pray? Oh, I said, sure. He said, I don't mean no kind of prayers. He said, the good Lord gives you this day and so much more. Did you ever thank him? Say, truth, I never heard of it. I heard of begging for something, but I never heard of thanking him for something. Never, really. But it made sense. He said, look, yes, fella, if I give you a box of matches, you would say, thank you. He gives you this day, you ever think of thank you? And he gave you so much more. Yeah. Now he said, look here, Bill. All your life you've been quitting drinking. You wanna do this. Ain't never gonna take a drink long as you live. Now look here, I'm gonna ask you a question. Can you stay sober one day? He asked me point blank. Can you stay sober one day? Oh, I said, sure, I can stay sober one day. I want to be a wise cracker and I'm an alcoholic. So, yeah, I can take 2 drinks of wine and stay sober 3 days. Because wine hurt me so bad, you know, I got to add a little touch. And he says, no, he says, all you have to do is stay sober one day. You can't drink tomorrow. Well, boy, I was amazed. I can't drink tomorrow, only need one day. Then something else came into that vision. He says to me, the thing said, Bill, your problem is solved. You don't have to worry about your birthday anymore. You don't have to worry about decoration day. You don't have to worry about the holidays. You don't know where you're going to get them or not. So all you do, one day at a time, And when they do, the good Lord gives them to you, you can say, still say, not today. You know, I found out that not today is the best answer God can fortify a man with. Put it this way. Some of your friends are saying, are you drinking? He says, no, I quit. Boy, never telling you quit. Well, man, I know how much liquor you can get. You know one thing, I've been out with you, and you can do so-and-so. Man, I ain't never met a man can handle his liquor like you can. One little drink, come on, take one. But you know, when I tell him, not today, and repeat it, not today, the conversation ceases. Every time that I brag that I would never take a drink as long as I live, and I'm in it. Don't think I don't know how many times I walked into my house, I'm stripped of everything, and my wife's sitting there shaking and crying. I'll probably be at the ironing board, you know, tears streaming down her cheeks and so forth. And that sorrow would get into my heart, saying, honey, you don't have to, I'll never do that again. But I did. But since I met that man, he told me one day at a time. One day. You know, I've made a little over 13 years, I think. Only one day. You know, and that thing of getting up, and when I roll out of bed on my knees, not because I'm a good guy, but some of the things you've got to keep active in. You've got to keep an active association. You know, when I associated with the drunks, I stayed drunk. I didn't want no guy. Suppose you met me, any of you met me, you're on your way to Idley's and I'm going down to Pete's. And you say, come on, Bill, let's go in Idley's. I don't want no Idley's, I want to go to Pete's. Now you go into Idley's and when you come back, you meet me at Pete's. Because Pete's is where I was going. And that guy didn't want to go to Pete's, he wanted to go to Idley's. It's just that simple. Now I run with the guy that goes to Idley's. Yeah, we go to Idley's now. So it makes it easy. But you got to fight for it. You know, like the little boy say, come home with a black eye, you know. And his daddy says, son, who gave that black eye? The boy says, nobody. I fought for it. And the same way you're going to do here. Nobody's going to hand you anything. But I want to tell you, fella, hang on. You knew me. Let me tell you something. You haven't begun to live. Sure, you're going to have hardship. Man, yeah. You're going to have plenty of them. But I tell you, it won't be as hard as those others. You've got people in your corner. You know, things that happen, it makes me cry a little bit. Shed tears of gratitude, you know. I see things. Before, you know, things didn't happen right with me being covered. I said, oh, they only did that with me. Hardship. None whatever. Every man that's born in this good world has a problem. It's not easy. We fight for our existence. And let me say this. All men are your friends. I like to repeat again. So many men in those saloons that I felt, you know, when I had the role, tell him to get out of the way. I can buy you a drink. And at 5 o'clock, my robot is gone. And I have to ask you to give me car fare at home. Yeah. But after being an alien, it's a little bit different. I'll never have a dollar if someone like you don't have it. And it'll never be any good to me if you're not there. Isn't that different? And I'll be. He gave every man time. You're an individual that he put on earth. Not for your purpose, but for his purpose. I tell my wife, I said, you have a different touch than I have. But let me tell you something about Alcoholics Anonymous. That it shows you the fundamental part, the cement way of life. I don't envy any man with a big job. I don't envy any man with a big job.
I don't envy any man that has a lot of money. Every time the good Lord gives the guy more, he takes them away. The only fly boy, look at the fly boy, says, I don't worry about nothing, Charlie. Don't let nothing worry. And he don't have anything either. Yes, it's just like the story. I go down home, and my wife said, you quit running with Jim Jackson, because Jim Jackson ain't no good. I said, now listen here, let me tell you something about Jim Jackson. Jim Jackson's a friend of mine, and I can get anything Jim Jackson got. But you know, come to think about Jim Jackson, he ain't never had anything. Yes, but this is all we got to do is. Now I'm a useful individual. I can work every day. I go in my foreman's office, put my feet on his desk, and I tell him, yeah, you support me, fella, I ain't supporting you. See, now look here, now where did you have my pay here? You hear me? You know, we have a lot of fun. Before we couldn't have, oh, he ain't no good, he's a boss. I tell him, every day you work for me. Yeah, when I get to be a big man, I work for you, but now you have my pay. And I got that from old Henry Ford. You know, I used to sit on that stool, you know, get drunk. I said, well, I don't have to worry. Henry Ford didn't make that automobile until he was 46 years old. And I got a few years ago. Yeah, I had him. You know, when I got 46 years old, I wasn't going. I was gone. But you know, when I came into AA, and outside, I was thinking about his money. But after I come in AA, I got a different picture than Henry Ford. All he wanted to do was make an automobile. If he knew that he had to feed all these employees that he had, he wouldn't have had that job. No, he wouldn't have made it. Anything, the good Lord just gives you a plan. Regardless how much, that artist, all he wanted to do was pay that bill. And all I wanted to do was pay so that I may render some service to my fellow man as he's rendered some service to me. I thank you.
Bill, for a wonderful speech. I heard you before, but it's really better tonight, I believe.